Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. We are having a much-needed conversation about race and the history of this country, but how can we ensure that Indigenous voices are part of that conversation? How can we ensure that Native American history receives the attention it deserves? On today's Your Call, we are talking about Native activism from Alcatraz to Standing Rock, and we have a great panel of guests in studio today. Dr. Lineta Warjack was one of the 89 students who sailed across the San Francisco Bay to reclaim Alcatraz for all Native people. That was on November 20th, 1969. The Indians of all tribes were there to take a stand to demand why more than 500 treaties had been dishonored over and over again. She lived there for 19 months. Dr. Lineta Warjack is a member of the Shoshone-Bannock tribes of Fort Hall, Idaho. She was the first Native American student at UC Berkeley and helped establish the first interdisciplinary department of ethnic studies in 1969, composed of Native, Black, Asian, and Chicano studies. She made a short documentary called The Occupation of Alcatraz that sparked a revolution. You can find it at yourcallradio.org. Her forthcoming book is called Colonization Battlefield, a Native American perspective and personal history of oppression, survival, and resistance. Dr. Lineta Warjack will be speaking on a panel about the Red Power Movement tonight in San Francisco at 6 o'clock at the California Historical Society. It's on Mission at 3rd. You can find more information about tonight's event and also watch her documentary at yourcallradio.org. And Dr. Lineta Warjack joins me in studio. Hi, thank you so much for coming in.
Good morning, and thank you for having me here.
We're also joined by Eloy Martinez, a member of the Southern Ute tribe. For more than a year, Eloy, his wife Leslie, an Apache, and his four-year-old son lived in a cell overlooking the island of Alcatraz's dock. Eloy was also present for the occupation of Wounded Knee in 1973 and was a firekeeper at Standing Rock last year. Eloy led a successful campaign to restore artifacts from the original Alcatraz occupation, and he regularly returns to the island for the annual Un-Thanksgiving ceremony. And Eloy also joins me in studio. Hi, Eloy. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. One correction.
Yes.
I was not at Wounded Knee, and I'm not a member of AIM. I've always been a member of Indians of all tribes.
Oh, okay. Sorry, we got that wrong. I'll take that out. Thank you for correcting me. We're also joined by Isabella Zizi, a member of the Northern Cheyenne, Arikara, and Muscogee Creek tribes, and the founder of Earth Guardian Bay Area. Isabel Zizi's family has resided in Richmond for over 40 years, and they've served the Native community by bringing the first ever Native American Health Center and powwow to their city. And Isabel also joins me in studio. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, it's great to have all of you. And I want to start off by asking you to talk about this moment that we're in, because we've been doing a lot of shows about what happened in Charlottesville. There's a heated debate about monuments. Over the weekend, there was a debate in Manhattan about whether to take down that massive Christopher Columbus statue. I mean, there's just so much happening right now. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, let's start off with you, Dr. Lineta Warjack. What do you make of this moment we're in right now?
Well, we've been fighting for this moment for a long time. When this country is founded on genocide and post-genocidal policies have been following for the last 100 years, then we need a moment. We need time, which is why we took Alcatraz in the first place, is to talk about the issues and see what we could do to get the government to honor all our treaties. And because of the policies and the ill treatment that we've been given, the control of the economics on the reservations and the poverty, the teen suicide, alcoholism, and everything. Yeah. You know, we need to get things changed. We need some kind of representation. We're not represented. We don't have any civil liberties, not to this day. And we're just having to contend with oil companies and uranium mines and everything that is coming on our land, the pollution to our land and our water and our air. And it's It's happening, and we just need to have those issues resolved somehow with the support of the American public, because it's happening to them too.
Eloy, what would you add? What do you think about this moment we're in right now?
I think it's really important. And, you know, it's interesting, number 45 said, would you like to pull down the statues of Washington? I say yes. You know, and all those other ones, because that is all of the fake news that's out there, if they want to talk about fake news. And I think it's important right at this period of time, and it's really important to see a lot of young people like this young lady here being active. And it's you know, to me, that's seeing the future and knowing that some of the things that we did back in the day are being carried on by the young people. And I just want to give them a lot of kudos and say thank you for doing that.
Isabella, what would you add? As a young Native activist, you're so involved in many different movements. What do you think about this moment we're in right now?
So I'm also one of the youngest members of Idle No More SF Bay, and because of that movement, it was, you know, it was originally started up in Canada with First Nations who were, you know, fighting to stop the tar sands up in their territories, and when we started our chapter out here, it was started by grandmothers. Mm-hmm. And I was truly inspired by all the work that they were doing. And, you know, this moment that we're in right now, you know, I pay my respects to the elders who sit next to me, because, you know, if it wasn't for them to raise that voice of concern for Indigenous peoples, then, you know, a lot of people won't know about what's happening out here. And, you know, because of the Relocation Act in the 1950s that sent a lot of the natives out here to the Bay Area, you know, if it wasn't for our voices out here, you know, they wouldn't really be heard. And so, you know, these movements from Alcatraz to Standing Rock to now, and many other movements that's been happening around the world, you know, it's so important for all of us of all tribes, of all cultures, to stay informed, to stay involved, because, you know, this is one earth and we're all one people and we all need to stand together. Mm.
Do you feel like Indigenous voices are being heard right now as we have this really important conversation about where we are today?
Not as quite as they should be.
There's always been a block or a blackout on the media when it comes to Indigenous people. The media has never really covered us, and I really appreciate you, at least, you know, this radio station, for at least wanting to talk about it. I know KPFA has always been supportive. Mm. But actually, it's very hard to get a voice, to have our voices heard. So.
Why is that? Because Black Lives Matter has drastically changed the conversation about so many issues. And natives are also being killed, when you look at the stats, very, very high numbers. Why do you think that Indigenous voices are still not, the voices aren't as amplified as they should be? On social media, things have definitely changed, but what can we do to change that when you're talking about national media, radio, TV, what have you?
Well, Native people, we're connected to the earth, so we're coming from matriarchal societies, which is the balance of male and female, and we're connected. And the Western society, or the patriarchy, is very different. It's the hierarchy of oppression, and we're on the very bottom of it, and that's where they intend to keep us. So it's hard to get out our voices, but we do everything we can to try and make sure that the issues are known, because our Mother Earth is being destroyed, and we are the protectors, and that's our responsibility, and that's all in our prayers, so we have to continue.
Eloy, what would you add?
I think that, you know, this whole Native American and Indian thing was all a big oppression thing, and the genocide and all that. I think it's just meant to keep us on the bottom so that we don't get those voices out. You know, and I think maybe might be something to soothe maybe the guilty consciences of old people and the young people. You know, like a lot of young white people say, well, what can I do about it? I said, well, if your father or your elders or your people were patriots, and you need to give it back. It's that simple to make it right, you know.
And also, Isabella, what would you say about this? Because I get press releases here on a regular basis about everything from voting rights to housing to poverty, and it's usually Blacks, Latinos, Asians, and Native Americans are hardly ever included.
Never mentioned.
And I always write them back and ask why, and sometimes they answer. In fact, the New York Times had a piece about how the number of Blacks and Latinos attending college today is actually lower than it was in the 80s. Native Americans weren't included. So I wrote the reporters and said, why not? And they said, well, in order for anyone to be included, it had to be higher than 5%. And Native American college students at most colleges are lower than 5%. Yeah. But they should have pointed that out.
Right. And you make a really good point. I was going to mention, you know, it starts with the school system. You know, it starts with the history books that they teach the students and the teachers as well. You know, they have to follow this certain criteria by following these books, but it's always, you know, it's a one-side story when it comes to these history books, and it's time for them to, you know, reach out to us, you know, reach out to the elders, who reach out to the community of, you know, the different natives out here, and ask for lectures, ask for presentations on what's really happening, you know, hear the real story from our side, because that's what's needed. Our voices can be heard in the school system, and it's just a give or take, or, you know, reaching out to us. We're always more than glad to, you know, let our voices be heard, because we know how important it is.
Can I ask how old you are?
I'm 23.
Okay, you're 23. So you were in high school not too long ago. Mm-hmm. What did you learn about Native American history?
Well, you know, I mainly learned about the California Natives, and we didn't really, I guess, when I was growing up, like around, you know, like elementary school and all, we didn't really learn about the missions. It was a bit of a blur about me, but I remember, I think I was in fifth grade, my teacher, she actually said, we were reading a story about the Lakota Sioux tribe, and she called it the Sioux. And I went back home to my mom, and I asked her, I said, what does S-I-O-U-X spell? And she said, Sioux. And I said, I thought so. Said, my teacher said it's Sioux. She said, no, that's wrong. And so, you know, when I went to go read that same quote, my teacher corrected me. And it's like, you know, you're wrong. You know, you can't be teaching these little kids the wrong way to say things. And, you know, a few of my friends in high school, like when we were reading about the California Natives, they, you know, they blurt out unintentionally, you know, hey, Isabella, that's your cousins. And I'm like, no, I'm sorry, but I'm not a California native. Those aren't my cousins. You can't automatically put us all together in a bundle, because we're not all the same people, or the same, we don't come from the same tribes. And so it's, you know, being strict and really teaching the students, really teaching even the teachers, you know, what's right from wrong, and what's the truth and what's not.
The San Francisco Chronicle just reported that the fourth grade tradition of building a California mission out of popsicle sticks and sugar cubes is being pushed aside by the state as history lessons change to reflect all cultures and more accurately depict the past. 2017, this is finally being changed. Lineda, when we talk about, there's so much to talk about, but curriculum especially, what would you like to see changed? I mean, there's just so much. California has such a long history, and there's new, really amazing new research coming out, new books coming out. But when it comes to history class, basic history in schools, what would you like to see change, and how can we do that?
Well, we need an accurate history, and the truth needs to come out, and I guess that's why they don't want to hear it, because they can't handle the truth of the genocide and how they've continued to try to destroy us and wipe us off the planet, basically. We're only one half of 1% of the entire population left. Yeah. You look at say Mexico or South America, they're still running at maybe 60 or 80%, Canada 20%, and we're only one half of 1%, just federally recognized Indian tribes of the entire population. So they really intend to wipe us out if they tried Well, we went through the genocide and then the boarding schools where they brainwashed everybody into accepting Western society, which is, like I said, the hierarchy and the opposite of where we come from, the matriarchy, and being connected to the earth through the natural laws. So they don't want to recognize the natural laws, and they like their made-up laws that keep us in place. But if they would, I know the truth is hard to take, but for a country that's based upon genocide, they need to own up to it so that we can start out as the real true American people that we are, because we are all good people and we need to maintain that direction.
Lenita Warjack, Dr. Lenita Warjack, was one of the 89 students who sailed across the San Francisco Bay on November 20th, 1969, to reclaim Alcatraz for all Native people. She is a member of the Shoshone-Bannock tribes of Fort Hall, Idaho. She was the first Native American student at UC Berkeley and helped establish the Department of Ethnic Studies. Her short documentary called The Occupation of Alcatraz That Sparked a Revolution is online. You can find it at yourcallradio.org. Her forthcoming book is called Colonization Battlefield, A Native American Perspective and Personal History of Oppression, Survival, and Resistance. Dr. Lenita Warjack will be speaking on a panel tonight about the Red Power Movement at the California Historical Society in San Francisco. You can find ticket information at yourcallradio.org. We're also joined by Eloy Martinez, a member of the Southern Ute tribe. For more than a year, Eloy, his wife Lessie, an Apache, and his four-year-old son lived in a cell overlooking the island's dock. And he led a successful campaign to restore artifacts from the original Alcatraz occupation, and he still returns to the island for the annual Un-Thanksgiving ceremony. Isabella Zizi is a member of the Northern Cheyenne, Arikara, and Muscogee Creek tribes, and she's founder of the Earth Guardians Bay Area. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. What are your thoughts about the movements we're talking about, from Alcatraz to Standing Rock? If you are Native American, what do you think about the moment we're in right now, and what can we do to ensure that more Indigenous voices are involved in these very important conversations? If you were a member of the Red Power Movement, if you remember the Alcatraz occupation, we'd love to hear from you if you have a story to share. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Eloy, before we talk about Alcatraz, the occupation of Alcatraz, you were involved in a successful campaign to restore artifacts from the original occupation. I remember reading so many articles about the murals, about just everything that you learn at Alcatraz is actually pretty good. It's better than most museums about Native history. How did you successfully launch this campaign, and what can we learn from that to ensure that places like Yosemite, for example, the history museums in this country that don't do a very good job telling the stories, change that?
Well, I think you have to be persistent, number one, and you have to kind of just keep going back and talking to people, because it's not easy sometimes to change people's mind once they're set. But on the repainting on Alcatraz, they had started sandblasting and doing some other stuff because the conditions are deteriorating. And I had gone out there one day for something other than that, and I seen some painters there, and I asked, well, what are they doing there? And they says, well, they're going to restore the paintings. I says, who's going to restore the paintings? And they says, this paint company. And I said, BS. I don't know if I can say that or not, but that's what I said. And they gave me 10 days to get some people together. And I said, the people that put those things should be the ones that put it back. And we were able to find maybe 10 or 12 people. Some other people had promised to show up, but originally about 10 people. Richard Oakes, his daughter and his grandson, Gerard Lewa and his son. There was, I don't know, a few others. Chris Longoria and her sister, who were also there when they were children. And most of the ones that did the painting were children of the original occupiers, because, like, you know, we're all original occupiers getting kind of hard to find, and some of us are dropping, you know, here and there. You know, right. There's not too many of us left. But I thought it was really important because, you know, every time that ferry boat goes around that island, you can see those signs, and it's something that people have to say, what is that? Mm-hmm. Why is it there? You know, and that's, I think that the original intent, when they put the paintings up, Lineta, and Lineta did a lot of those paintings, you know, so she knows the original intent. And I think it's important that all of our children and grandchildren see those as they go around the island. And she's also been involved in repainting, too. So, you know, I think it's important. And I think the kids appreciate it because, like, some of them right now, you know, they'll look at it and say, well, you know, but 10 or 15 years later from now, they're going to be telling their grandchildren and their children, say, hey, we were part of that. Mm. And that's where that storytelling and the history, you know, it might not be in the schools, but I think that's how we have to get that point across, you know, because in the schools, they've already, you know, you see what they did in Arizona when they took all the books out on anything that to do with our history. Mm. You know, and I think if they had their way, they would do that across the land and instill, you know, their story, which is pretty much what I think the whole intent was from the beginning. Hmm. But I think it's important that those signings and signatures and all that stuff be there because that's history, you know, and you can't erase it. And when you go across that island, it still says Indian land. And, mm-hmm. you know, we might not have no deed, and we might not have got everything. But I don't, you know, a lot of people originally said Alcatraz was not successful. I think it was successful, you know. And it took a lot of years for people to realize that. And, you know, Lineta and all of the original 14 people that were there, those are the people that got to be commended because they were the ones that put their stuff on the line. Thank you.
Thank you. Lineta, when you think about that day on November 20th, 1969, you were also at Standing Rock. Before we go to break, what really stands out for you about the activism involved in the occupation of Alcatraz and what was most effective?
What do you mean by what stands out?
Well, in terms of the actions you all took, the message that you embraced, what would you say was most effective?
Well, the most effective thing was that we were in an international seaport city, and we didn't think about that would be a good way to get our voices heard. We just did it because to us it was like this is another treaty being broken and in this modern age at the time, because like I was, what, 22, 23, about the same
wow.
age as
Isabella.
Isabella. And of course, you're just thinking, we got to do it. This is a broken treaty. Let's go out there and let's just take that island. And that's what we did. I was a chairman of the student group from UC Berkeley, and Richard Oakes was a chairman of the group from San Francisco State. And we always worked together, coordinated our activities.
I was going to ask you, what led up to that moment? Because I'm thinking about Rosa Parks. Everyone knows about what happened on the bus, but a lot of people don't know that a lot of work went into that. She was an activist. She wasn't just a woman who decided to not give up her seat on a bus. But a lot of people don't know that history. So what led up to the decision to sail across the bay to reclaim Alcatraz?
Well, probably the Third World Strike at UC Berkeley, when we established our first interdisciplinary department of Indigenous Studies, which we called Native, Chicano, Asian, and Black at the time. And being in that strike, our peaceful strike, and we were able to establish it at UC Berkeley, which was successful, and that automatically goes to all the UC campuses across California. So with that instant organization of Native people throughout the state, it was easy to mobilize to bring everybody out to the island, just give them the word, because we already knew each other and who each other were, so we just gave the call. But it was like the straw that broke the camel's back, I would say, is like another treaty being broken right in front of us. And as young people, you're just not going to allow that. You know, considering who we are, where we came from, what our people were going through, the extreme poverty conditions at the time. And, of course, it's still a continuation, but we were able to get some support at that time to seize the agenda, the political agenda in this country, to turn things around. And, of course, since then, it's gone back to the same. So we need to continuously educate America and let them know what's going on. And to find that forum is very difficult, so we just go back and try to continue to get our voices heard again and again, because it's re-education since they left us out of the history books and continue.
I noticed just quickly under the comments of your documentary about Alcatraz, so many people said, I didn't know about this. I mean, this is a perfect 8-minute, 9-minute video to show in schools, right?
Yes, it is. It's not that long where you're going to lose everyone.
Yeah, especially these days. Dr. Lineta Warjack is a member of the Shoshone-Bannock tribes of Fort Hall, Idaho, and she'll be speaking on a panel tonight about the Red Power Movement at 6 o'clock at the California Historical Society here in San Francisco. You can find ticket information and also watch her documentary at yourcallradio.org. Eloy Martinez is a member of the Southern Ute tribe, and Isabella Zizi is a member of the Northern Cheyenne, Arikara, and Muscogee Creek Tribe. She's also founder of Earth Guardians Bay Area. Today we are talking about Native American activism from Alcatraz to Standing Rock. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. To take part in today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, toll free. Let us know if you're a first-time caller. We always like to hear from new voices. And if you'd prefer to write rather than call, you can email feedback@yourcallradio.org. You may leave a comment at our website at yourcallradio.org, or you may tweet us at yourcallradio.
Different people in your soul. Feel like a loser until you see that as you bend, you learn to be.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will have a conversation with Oscar-winning screenwriter John Ridley about his new documentary, Let It Fall, L.A. 1982 to 1992. It looks at the 1992 uprising in Los Angeles after four L.A. police officers accused of the brutal beating of black motorist Rodney King were acquitted. It sparked 5 days of deadly violent protests. That's on Friday. And then that's tomorrow. Tomorrow, Friday, it's our media roundtable. We will talk about Joe Arpaio from Arizona. We'll also talk about the devastating floods, not only in Texas, but also in Bangladesh, India, and Nepal. And I just want to remind you, if you have any family or friends in Texas, because the Republican legislature recently changed a law, they have to file their flood insurance claims by September 1st. This is not getting the attention it deserves, and we'll put links. Actually, just search for it. Flood insurance, September 1st, Texas. Really important information to get out there. Today, we are talking about Native American activism from Alcatraz to Standing Rock. We're having a much-needed conversation about race and the history of this country, but how can we ensure that indigenous voices are part of the conversation and that Native American history receives the attention it deserves? Today, we're joined by Dr. Lineta Warjack. She was one of the 89 students who sailed across the SF Bay to reclaim Alcatraz for all Native people on November 20th, 1969. She's a member of the Shoshone Bannock tribes of Fort Hall, Idaho. You can see her short documentary, The Occupation of Alcatraz. It's at yourcallradio.org. And during the break, we were just talking about how there's so many things to discuss, and that's why she wrote her forthcoming book. It's called Colonization Battlefield, A Native American Perspective and Personal History of Oppression, Survival, and Resistance. She'll be speaking on a panel tonight about the Red Power Movement, 6 o'clock, the California Historical Society in San Francisco. Find ticket information, yourcallradio.org. Eloy Martinez is a member of the Southern Ute tribe. For more than a year, he and his family lived in a cell overlooking the island's dock, and he was involved in restoring artifacts from the original Alcatraz occupation. Isabella Zizi is a member of the Northern Cheyenne, Arikara, and Muscogee Creek tribes, and founder of Earth Guardians Bay Area. She's one of the youngest members of Idle No More. And if you'd like to join us, there's a lot to talk about, but it's just so important to talk about how do we get more Native voices to the table, and how do we rewrite the history and tell the real history of Native Americans. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Tawasi calling from Eugene, Oregon. Hi, Tawasi. Welcome to the show. Do we have Tawasi? Are you there?
Hello, can you hear me?
Hi, yes, go ahead.
I'm a first-time caller, and I just wanted to thank you for having this conversation. And my question is for the... I'm sorry, I didn't catch the names perfectly, but for the woman warrior and also for our indigenous youth.
Dr. Lineta Warjack and Isabella Zizi.
So, I am the grandson of the chief of the Nooksack tribe, Roy George, and he fought for recognition for our tribe. Because of recent corruption, the federal government is stepping in and taking over many aspects of tribal management. So I was hoping that, Dr. Warjack, you could speak to the importance of the old way compared to the colonized way. Because of the colonized way, we essentially suffered a power grab, and now we're losing our own tribal sovereignty. And then I was just hoping that the young lady, Isabella, that you could speak to the importance of courage and how you find courage to stand up against these things. And because it's scary. Mm-hmm. And so I'll listen to the answers off the air. Thank you again.
Thank you, Tawasi.
Okay, I think that's really important, the question that you asked, because the significance and the difference between the way that we were organized under the matriarchy, which connected us to the earth and all life, is like a tree. And the tree is the physical side, and the roots underneath the ground are spiritual. And we recognize both, and we try to maintain that balance. Whereas in Western society, they're organized under the hierarchy of the patrilineal society, where they only recognize that physical part and they don't address or acknowledge the spiritual foundation and the roots. So that's who we are. And when you're organized under that patriarchy, it's oppressive. It's a very oppressive system, and the Indian Reorganization Act just put us back into, took away all our tribal matriarchal foundation and put us under that patriarchy where they could control us, and they've always controlled us. They control us politically, economically, and in any way that you can. The funding has only been to support maybe a third of the population. So the other two-thirds are under the control of the one-third if they can control them. And, of course, they only take care of their families, and they learn all the bad ways under the patriarchy to be selfish. And it's corrupted the tribal government system. It's not our original traditional government. So I think we just have to keep in mind that we do have a balance, and we know that many of our people have fallen into that trap and have become a victim of that system, but there is a way to correct it, and just keep up your prayers and maintain your spirituality, because that will guide you and give you the strength to keep your voice strong.
Mm. Isabella?
And for me, while we were doing this, we were all talking, I was remembering a good way to, include Native people is to really recognize the original people whose territory that we do stand on. And I think here in San Francisco, right in this area, it might be the Ohlone people. Mm-hmm. So I do want to pay my respects to them and to include that every time, we do openings or every time we, greet people, just reminding people whose land we stand on. And just as a young activist, I say, finding that courage, it's really, educating myself. And, because of the grandmothers of I Don't Know More SF Bay, they have really taught me a lot of important knowledge. I look up to the elders because they have already been through a lot of history. They have been through a lot of issues along with our ancestors. If it wasn't for our ancestors who have fought really hard and long to make sure that my existence today can be here, that just shows our resilience of all people, of all Indigenous people. And so, it's really just speaking from the heart and really staying connected well to the earth and understanding that, we all need water, we all need clean air, and we all need clean soil to have a healthy and sustainable way of living, and to always remember that we're not just doing this for us, but we're doing this for the next seven generations. Those are the ones who are really important. It's always thinking about the future, always thinking about the young ones, because all of the decisions that are being made now, today, with the administrations and all, it's going to affect our future. And those are the ones who we need to stand up and speak for, because we have our voice, we have our unique styles of creativity and power within ourselves, and it's important to spread it as much as we can.
Eloy, what would you add? You still go to the Unthanksgiving ceremonies at Alcatraz, but you also go randomly to talk to people about the history. You've seen so much. What keeps you going?
Well, I think a lot of people on Alcatraz don't even remember the occupation, and I go there to remind them that they're still on Indian land, and it's interesting the reaction you get when some of the boats come out there and you tell them, you realize you're on Indian land, and they say, what? Then you proceed to tell them also that if it had not been for the Indians, all tribes occupation, they would not be there today to visit that island. That would have been a casino, because that was the original intent. So for them to say that we didn't have any consequences or any benefits from that, I think is wrong, because we do have an Alcatraz. The way I view it, that's a really good podium. There's a lot of people you could speak to, and even the ones that are ignorant will take that knowledge that you give them to them and go back and say, hey, you know what? And that's why I go out there, just to remind people that it's still Indian land, And I think that's important to remind them everywhere, not only on the island, but just to remind them, that this whole territory was stolen from way back when, and there's still no treaties, So I think that's important. And doing that on Alcatraz, I think, is more important, because most of the time I don't go out there by myself. I always take a couple of people, and I like to take the younger people with me, because they're the ones that are going to be the next ones. And I've been doing the fire now for, 20-plus years out there on most of the ceremonies. And the guy that gave me the fire originally told me I would be there for a temporary thing. So it's been 20 years temporary. But the thing is, by doing the fire, you also can get the young people out there, and they know and learn respect. Most of them already have the respect. But to see them out there in the middle of the night, we go out there in the middle of the night, they clean up the rocks, they clean up all the stuff for the dancers, they make sure the elders are comfortable, bring them a blanket. If they're cold, they bring them close to the fire. And that's what we need to do, because everything that we're trying to do and accomplish starts with respect. Mm. Respect for ourselves and respect for all of our resin, And we also have to remember that we're all human beings. And I think the sooner that everybody realizes that, things make a whole lot better for everybody. So I say ho to all the human beings.
Mm. Well, thank you again for calling. Let's go next to Kalat in Alameda. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
I just want to bring up some names and a little bit of historical that sometimes gets overlooked. I guess Lee Brightman, who just passed away recently, was the founder of UNA, United Native Americans, which preceded AIM. And also Ernie Peters Longwalker, who was also at Alcatraz and also did the first longest walk, who is still alive today. Could anybody there speak on either one of those two gentlemen, please?
Well, Lee Brightman, he did a tremendous amount of work in the Bay Area. Lee and I co-founded UNA in 1968, and prior to that, he was the voice in the Bay Area that stood up for indigenous people, native people. He was a outspoken, wonderful man. I don't know the other two.
I met Lee Brightman in the '60s when he was at Berkeley. I didn't know a whole lot about him, but he invited me to join UNA. I still got a card in my pocket, matter of fact, that I've been carrying around for a whole bunch of years. But I think everybody that was involved in the whole Native American movement, I think it's very important. You know, and it doesn't make any difference what kind of a role you played, as long as you're playing that role, you're moving things forward. You know, we might, maybe agree or not to disagree or however that goes, but I think that moving forward with one intent and trying to remember that, you know, it's important that, you know, that the first people of this country are remembered, not forgotten. You know, and we're every time they mention, any kind of a group, they always fail to mention Native Americans, or they put it in as an afterthought, you know, and we're usually red, yellow, black, or green, or purple, or something. That's how they describe us at the end. Instead of, I just think that it's important for everybody, and I'm really glad for this young lady, you know, because I've seen them in action, and, you guys are really powerful.
Awesome. You know? Thank you.
Thank you,
Isabel.
Well, thank you for calling in. Let's go to Chris in San Francisco. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I just wanted to remind, I just finished a book called Tending the Fire, Native Voices, from the University of New Mexico Press, that has over 95 writers discussing their work and their lives, and that's just one thing. But part of that is I also on YouTube did a film at the same amount of time when I was taking the portraits of all these writers. It's called Tending the Fire, and it's about 50 minutes long with 23 people reading their work. So I just wanted to say that the Native Voices, they're difficult to find sometimes, but you can find them. Mm. And I want to remind everyone that Ms. Kim Shuck, Cherokee, is our new poet laureate of San Francisco as of this year. So I think the word is getting out a little bit, at least, because this movement, you know, that started in 1491, I think is hopefully gaining some steam. Because the recognition of these fine writers is what I was looking for, and their civilization and culture has always been under extreme question by the government, and they've never gotten a fair shake by the government. So I just wish that this would all sort of switch around, you know?
Well,
it seems to be getting more and more difficult down in Arizona.
Thank you for calling. Sorry to cut you off, but we have a bunch of a few more callers. Today's guests are dedicating their lives to bringing these issues to the forefront. We'll put a link to the book you mentioned. Thank you for calling about that. And then we also just found an article about Lehman Brightman. He passed away in this last June. A proud member of the Sioux tribe, activist, longtime East Bay College history professor. I'm reading from the East Bay Times now, who rebelled against the U.S. government's account of history. So thanks for bringing up his name, and we'll also link to this. Let's hear from Lisa in San Francisco. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much. I just want to mention my mother, Juanita, she took part in the longest walk in 78. And what I remember as a child about Alcatraz is, and later I learned more, is that it brought to light the fact that Native Americans didn't have even the right to pray and to practice their own religions until, I believe, 1978, and which, again, was violated at Standing Rock when the water protectors were praying, and there was this brutal militarized response, which, by the way, now that U.S. police are going to have access to all these military equipment, is just basically waiting for us as well. And I just felt the need that we need to realize that this is when you're cutting off the water source for a Standing Rock tribe, Sioux tribe, you're also practicing genocide, because that's the main water source for the existence of the future of that tribe. So genocide is going on today, and we have a responsibility to divest from the oil companies and from the banks that keep this genocide going. I just felt the need to say that. I hope it's okay.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling in, Lisa. We have just a couple minutes left, and during the break I asked all of you, how do you think the media should tell these stories? Because one strong criticism is when ABC News, for example, comes to Pine Ridge, they mostly focus on the negative stories, and there are a lot of stories about poverty to tell. But there's so many other stories. How do you think the media should balance that?
Well, one of the things is, when I was going through my graduate program and we did media, then the books that we read, they prioritized the news, and the environment and Indians were at the very bottom. So they need to start allowing the students to cover the environment and Indigenous people, because it's right in their right in their plans of how you treat people in the media, and that's what they learn.
Mm-hmm.
That needs to be changed.
And I even struggle with this, because it's so important to tell the story and to hopefully get people outraged. I was just reading a Huffington Post piece, Isabella, about girls on the Pine Ridge. At Pine Ridge, they are missing school one week a month, because during that time of month, they don't have access to what we need when that happens. I mean, this is outrageous in 2017. That's so important to tell, but it's also important to tell the story of you and other young Native activists who are in Idle No More and going to Standing Rock and putting together these healing walks. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so it's really unfortunate what is happening to a lot of in a lot of the reservations, because really, the reservations are the worst place to live, unfortunately, for our Native people. And what I also want to include in this conversation is, you know, the missing and murdered Indigenous mm-hmm. women. You know, we just lost Savannah Graywind a couple of days ago, and that's always been overlooked continuously, especially in statistics. And we need to keep spreading our word out there that, you know, our women keep going missing. And a lot of this is because of the environmental racism that we deal with around these big fossil fuel projects, around the man camps that bring in outsiders, you know, and they just take over, they take control, they take advantage of our women. And, you know, all the work that we do out here, it's open to the public. It's open to all races, all nationalities to join us, because we understand that, like I mentioned, we're all one people on this earth, and environmental issues are connected to social justice issues. It's connected to immigrant rights issues and everything else, all the issues that are going on in the world. And we all need to unite with one another. We all need to find that balance with one another and, you know, truly understand that we're connected to the earth, and to respect the earth as much as we need to respect each other. And it's just a moment in time where we soon need to all wake up. And it also just takes one voice, one person to make that difference, you know, to spread that word to our different circles, to let them know, you know, come join us at this event. Come join us at this action. It's all nonviolent. It's all in prayer, and it's all in peace. And it's all led by Indigenous peoples. You know, join us. Educate yourself. That's how the word can be spread.
Mm. What would you add, Eloy?
I think that what Isabella said is perfectly right. I think that, you know, all those things that are happening, Black Cat, Standing Rock, nobody wants to talk about those. They don't want to talk about those issues of poverty. They don't want to talk about the issues of alcoholism, diabetes, all those other things that are vital to us. Nobody mentions that, you know. And almost everything, you know, in the media, I think, is trained to look for the negativity all the time. Over at Berkeley Park this last weekend, I was there and I seen a lot of stuff, and I didn't see the stuff the media was reporting. You know, I didn't see all that other stuff that, you know, I saw a lot of people getting together and, you know, being peaceful. And there might have been a couple incidents, but I think those incidents that happened were also provoked. The one incident I saw, one of the people there proceeded to spray some other people with pepper spray, and that's why he got chased out of the park. Now, that wasn't reported, you know, and I was there when I seen it happen. So, I think the media plays along with number 45 and the fake news, you know. So I don't expect a whole lot out of this administration for a long time. And I think people that we need to get together as a whole and start pushing on all that stuff, you know, because that man is the biggest liar that we've – I mean, he's the greatest, biggest liar we ever saw. So to quote Mr. Trump – so, but you know, we need to make people aware of that, you know, and it's important, you know, and I think that what Isabella and the young people are doing, it's really important because they are the faces, they are our faces, you know, they are our future, you know, and you know, I'm looking forward to the day when you're president and you can change all the rules, you know. So that's how I feel about young people. I think it's important that we support them, you know.
Well, yes. Definitely. Thank you for the laugh. I think we all need that right now.
Okay.
That is Eloy Martinez. He's a member of the Southern Ute Tribe, and he still goes to Alcatraz for the annual Unthanksgiving ceremony. If you can make it, I hope you can check it out this November. And he also regularly goes to share the history of Alcatraz. Dr. Lineda Warjack was one of the 89 students who sailed across the bay to reclaim Alcatraz. And she's also author of the forthcoming book, Colonization Battlefield. You can see her short documentary, The Occupation of Alcatraz, at yourcallradio.org. And if you're free tonight, I hope you can go to the California Historical Society. Dr. Lineda Warjack will be on a panel about the Red Power Movement. It starts at 6:00 here in San Francisco. We're also joined today by Isabella Zizi, a member of the Northern Cheyenne, Arikara, and Muscogee Creek Tribe. She's a founder of Earth Guardians Bay Area and one of the youngest members of Idle No More. Dr. Lineda Warjack, Eloy Martinez, and Isabella Zizi, thank you all for coming in today.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you so much. Your Call is produced here at KALW. Thanks to Ali Budner for producing today's show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Thanks for joining us.